Morning, Terry.
Hi, George.
Morning, Terry.
No, 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 no!
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Chick! Mama, she! Chick, 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 chick! Mama, she!
Bonjour, bonjour, mon ami, and welcome again to another episode of Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your money all the time with no microtransactions. Well, folks, this episode is actually a bit of a spontaneous thing for me, actually. I've actually found myself with half an hour free this afternoon, and I just had to make this one. I'm absolutely McCartney 2 obsessed at the moment. I've just recorded the episode with my good friend Tom Quee, who will be absolutely blowing you away on that episode, no doubt. I'm sure you will have listened to it by now anyway and will have laughed your ass off at our insane ramblings. But there's always more to talk about with a cult McCartney release like this. The same with Ram. And whilst there is a certain slither of my personality that would like to call McCartney 2 perfect, I just know that it isn't. And just like my experiences with Red Rose Speedway, I can't help but feel that I would rather live in one of those many, many other multiverses out there in the cosmos where McCartney 2 was that originally pitched double album. This is only made worse by the fact that McCartney hasn't even tried to bother to expunge the McCartney 2 bonus tracks from history, like Stalin, in the way that he did with Red Rose Speedway and that original acetate. No, the McCartney 2 re-release actually boldly displays and features all of those songs in their fully realised glory. But instead of being organised and placed in some sort of artistic order with some sort of meaning, they're just slapped on the end, like a temporary secretary, really. The result of all those songs being so fully produced and present on the release so many years later just feels like a bit of a cock tease and a big slap in the face from a big old elephant penis, as even Red Rose Speedway had the excuse of, you know, some of the songs not even being completely finished or produced, or some of them were only recorded live. And since McCartney 2 doesn't have anything like this, except for maybe Blue Sway, which we'll get onto later, the only excuse that I can think of is that the record company just simply didn't get it, and McCartney caved to pressure, and the original McCartney 2 double album was once again reduced to an annoying single release. So yeah, like Red Rose Speedway, this was supposed to be a double album, and history once again snatched it out of existence as it is wont to do, and instead we were given the much slimmer, much more commercially viable McCartney 2. Commercially viable in the sense that if it doesn't sell, you at least only lose the cost of 1 million discs rather than the cost of 2 million. Yes, I know that if I lived in the multiverse dimension with the double album, I would probably be doing a podcast where I'd be talking about reducing it down to a single album. But hey, remember folks, if I've taught you anything from this podcast, quantity is far better than quality. Look, I'm sure you know how this stuff kind of goes by now. I'm going to take one of McCartney's albums, and through a mixture of musical analysis, ego, and migraines, I'll be trying to change the track listing, track order, and length of the album to create an entirely new product. This product, hereby named McCartney 2, for the purposes of this podcast, will be an attempt at rewriting history, at giving McCartney's material the best possible package to be delivered to listeners, and allow Macca to avoid some of the most hindsight obvious pitfalls in his discography. For this fixer-upper podcast, however, I'm going to be less heretical than you might assume, especially if you've listened to the other ones. No, with McCartney 2, I consider the ground that I'm treading on to be rather holier than normal, and I don't want to spoil the party if I can help it. And whilst this may simply look like a crude tactic to avoid talking about each song placement in length, and it's a quick way to snap this whole article/podcast together and to avoid talking about all these changes, but the truth is I genuinely think McCartney got a whole lot right about the order of tracks on this album. So more or less I will, despite adding a whole extra disc's worth of material and content, be altering the original track listing as little as humanly possible. Plus it makes a slightly different challenge. But before we go in, we'll do some brief housekeeping. I'm very sorry, folks. If you'd like to get in contact with the show, the best way to do that is through our Twitter, which is @McCartneyPod. That's the central hub for the show. We post stuff there every day. It's the best way to get in touch and keep up to date. If you want to help support the show, if you'd like to keep the show free forever, which is something that I'd always like to do, this is as much a passion project for me as it is something that I hope you enjoy. If you'd like to see the show grow, if you'd like to show some appreciation, please check out the links, which is www.patreon.com/McCartneyPod. If you think this entire podcast has been worth a beer for me, then please check it out. I would appreciate that immensely. Find us on YouTube and Facebook simply by typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast. Drop us, as always, please, if you can spare a few moments in your life, leave us a 5-star iTunes review. That would really help us out there in the ratings, give us that little boost that we need. And finally, of course, please check out the blog. Now, this article was actually very recently a blog post up at www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. That's www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. And I wrote this article a couple of weeks ago, knowing that McCartney 2 was going to be an episode that I was going to be recording, and I had all these ideas for a McCartney 2 that I was going to talk about in the double album segment of the McCartney 2 episode, but I thought, this would be better as its own independent thing to give it a little more room to breathe. And that article has now been up for some time. I've had some great response from you people out there. It's had a nice amount of views, and now it's time to put the article's money where its mouth is and turn it into some podcast content for you people out there. But you could have seen it first, and you can see a whole load of bonus episodes up on the blog first at www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. Phew! Now we've got that out of the way. Somehow I'm going to turn one of my favourite, highly rated, most beloved cult albums, break it down into 1,000 pieces, build it up again, break it down again, have lunch, and if there's time, hopefully build it up again. Let's see, eh? Now, we're going to go on to Disc 1, Side 1. And, of course, we will start things with Coming Up. We're not going to be changing the track order, like I say, folks. Coming Up is a fantastic opening song. Moving swiftly on to Temporary Secretary. Nothing different about this at all. They are a great double hitter to introduce us to this bright, vibrant, slightly weird McCartney 2 world. So then we move on to the first new edition of the McCartney 2 canon. And I struggle to think of a more undeservedly underexposed Paul McCartney song, because I don't think there is a more undeservedly underexposed Paul McCartney song, and that song is Blue Sway, brackets, with the Richard Niles Orchestra. I only recently came across this song, and I must admit, like, my Spotify must think I'm stuck on a loop, because I'm just listening to this song over and over again, and I'm just so enraptured by that tranquil, enriching, cinematic atmosphere. Like, the song itself is essentially the spiritual McCartney 2 type sequel to Live and Let Die, as this song has Bond epic written all over it, written in a bold felt tip pen, along with Kasabian's Let's Roll Just Like We Used To. This song is my top choice for a hypothetical Bond theme tune. And why? Well, it just has everything you would expect from such a song, really. The production of this song is easily some of the most well-accomplished, lush, and majestically harmonious in his entire discography of work. The chorus is catchy and simple, and there is this very mysterious, alluring, almost beguiling quality to the song that reminds me of the sirens of the sea. You know, the music video itself is just footage of waves in the ocean, and you feel yourself being drawn in to the waves, and you're being called by this beautiful, sonorous sound that has all the underlying sexuality of all the best Bond tunes. The best part of this track is that it's just so different to something like Live and Let Die, though, and instead we have a wholly more subdued and oddly calming, almost too calming, really. Like, you know, we are being lulled into that siren, false sense of security trap. And again, that rich string section is wielded masterfully to create those nourishing rising sections, and then they come in again later where the strings are plucked in to create this effortlessly interwoven counter melody that's just so overwhelmingly awesome the first time you hear it that you really have to sit down and process what's just happened. You know, you just have to sit down and process what you've just heard, and then you find out that this song hasn't been snapped up by anyone anywhere for anything, and you're like, why? For those of you in the dark, the bracketed mentioning of the Richard Niles Orchestra refers to the fact that there are, in fact, two versions of this song, of which the Richard Niles version is the more recent of the two recordings, being reworked many, many years later. And what's interesting about this song is when you hear the original version, it's just shockingly sparse and empty, and there's no lyricism. And like George Martin coming on to Live and Let Die, you can see why Paul would bring on Richard Niles, as he brings something that Paul truly never could, an experience and an expertise in collaborative orchestral work. You know, his accompaniment just helps raise the song to truly transcendent levels, and without it, it really does flop like a dead trout. When you listen to that original version that's tacked onto the horrendously grating yet kind of annoyingly catchy Orly Horse Riders, you realise that it was never going to make the cut, and you can see why the Richard Niles version is the only choice, the only choice. But Sam, I hear you say, you can't pick the Richard Niles version because it didn't exist at the time of McCartney 2's recording and release. Well, you know what I say to that? I say, I like the song, it's my podcast, it was my article, and I'm already warping into different multiverses and dimensions at this point, so really don't take me up on technicalities here, folks. The Richard Niles version is here to stay. And then finally, we'll finish side one with On The Way, which, after three techno babble songs now, hopefully will appear as more of a jarring movement and will also serve to calm people down for disc two a little bit. Speaking of disc two, we start disc two with Secret Friend. If I'm going to start saying I recently discovered this song for every song to which it applies to, it's really going to start having the joint effect of both revealing how spontaneous this podcast really was in relation to my recording of McCartney 2, and also it will greatly reduce the variance in my sentence delivery, so this will be the last time I mention it. Honest. Secret Friend is a song that, when I first heard McCartney 2, made me question why Macca even allowed the song to be released to the public, even after all these years. It was banal and it was weird and I didn't know where it was going. However, upon deciding that I would do this episode and I would write this article and I would have to go back and listen to all of the McCartney 2 tunes again, like so many times with McCartney, something on that repeat listen just clicked in my head and I was an instant convert. Again, with side two, things are pretty much another day at the office, except this time we start the second side with the first of the major extended psychedelic jams. When it was originally part of the double album, this was put on the final disc, which I think is just wrong because this song is just far too challenging and far too lengthy to really hold someone's attention at that point. I feel like it's got much more room to breathe up on the second disc, and it's a nice change of pace, really, because I thought that the inclusion of the movement from On The Way to Waterfall to Nobody Knows was a bit of a misstep on McCartney's part, as it meant that we had two songs in a row that felt distinctly un-McCartney 2, and now that we've put Secret Friend in the middle, a very lengthy song, mind you, means that the album doesn't have to take 10 minutes to self-write itself before once again carrying on with all the Philip K. Dick meets Kraftwerk twiddle. So here now, instead, we're hoping to maintain the continuity and integrity of McCartney 2 by upping the dose of synth-based insanity much earlier on. Perhaps McCartney wanted to let us cool off after Coming Up and Temporary Secretary, but I say that is far too conservative, especially for a double album, and especially for an album as experimental and potentially alienating as this one anyway. So let's just say fuck it and toss everyone in the fucking deep end anyway, and only the strong will survive it. This is McCartney 2, not Band on the Run. Let's go for it. Like I say, we've had a break, then we move on to Waterfalls and Nobody Knows, and now we've only got two songs out of three that are breaking the flow of McCartney 2 a little bit. I didn't want it to be a literal techno song, non-techno song, techno song, non-techno song, which would have been very obvious. But now at least we have a much more even split before we finally go on to Front Parlour to finish the side off. Side 3 starts with Summer's Day Song, of course. Of course it has to. It's just a great opening track for a side. Then we move on to the next new inclusion, a song that I found myself liking more and more, even as I was writing the article that this was based off, and even during the recording of this podcast. We have Mr. H. Atom / You Know I'll Get You Baby.
Shangri-Las versus the Village People.
First and foremost, I had to include this song on the album because how can you possibly have a Paul McCartney album without a needlessly stitched together conjoined twin of a track? And now the album has one, allowing it to tick off another Maccaism off the list. Though in the case of Mr. H. Atom / You Know I'll Get You Baby, what we get is two pretty fun songs that are also the most poorly blended separate elements in the McCartney discography. And it's so blatant and egregious that it has to be intentional. This is the man who created the Abbey Road medley and Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey, after all. So the only explanation is that there was no real effective way to blend these two songs together, and McCartney simply saw the two tracks as having a spiritual connection or a similar aural kinship, and smushing the two tracks together with a bit of an interlude would breathe new life into them, as maybe neither would stand up on their own. Though I would argue against that case with You Know I'll Get You Baby. The second major factor I chose this song is more out of a sense of injecting a smattering of Joker-esque, Loki-esque chaos into this album, as Mr. H. Atom, You Know I'll Get You Baby is another song in the vein of Temporary Secretary that has the chance to be mind-bendingly annoying and buckets of silly fun at the same time. And I do hope some of the Alternate Dimension listeners hate this one as well. It isn't a song for the masses, though I am a merciful god in many ways too, and the rather divisive All You Horse Riders remains on the cutting room floor, even though that All You Horse Riders actually could be the B-side for something like Coming Up Now or Waterfalls. We'll have to write that one down. Personally, I feel like a homogenous McCartney 2 is going against the point of the entire album. This is a cult classic and not meant to be Band on the Run, like I say, so I intend to keep up that manic sense of unpredictability alive and well, and certain songs like Mr. H. Atom are just going to be thrown in there to catch you off guard. Yes, some songs like Coming Up will bring in the kids, Waterfall will bring in the grannies, and then we will subject all of them to the oddest, most off-the-wall concepts that a bored genius in his bedroom can come up with. Then side 3 doesn't let up. We go straight on to Frozen Jap. This probably could be done as one big medley, actually. The more I think about it, this is the techno album. We do have the softest song to bring us into side 3 with Summer's Day Song, but from then out, it really is just madness. Because then we move on to Dark Room. But this isn't Dark Room as we know it. This is the 11-ish minute cut. And I'm not really sure if it's possible to get bored of Dark Room anyway, so it's good that Suan made the call to cut the song when they did. Paul was obviously very fond of this little ditty, and he was rather sad to cut the song down to size in order to fit the woefully shorter version that we ended up with on the final release. Well, Paulie, there's no need to worry anymore, as this double album now has the room for the original cut. Now, there are certain elements online that feature like an 8-minute version, a 9-minute version of Dark Room. There are several different bootlegs out there. But the 11-minute cut, the exact 11-minute one, eluded me for quite a while. And then friend of the show, Jimmy McCulloch fan, Paul Sally, found it for me. Thank you very much for that. And I know why it was cut down. This song needed to be on the album, and that's all the room they had left. But now that we are afforded this extra room, we can have this 11-minute cut of Dark Room. It's just as funky, just as intriguing, just as silly, just as inquisitive, just as exciting and homemade and maddening. And it's just all the things that you love about Dark Room, but there's just more of it, a lot more of it, possibly 5 times more of it. Who doesn't want 5 times more of Dark Room? Extending Dark Room back to its original format is one of the biggest rewrites in history for this album. It is a move for the fans, definitely. And it's a move on Paul's part, as you know that this is the version that he wanted to release. And I'm surprised he didn't release as at least like a 7-minute single, maybe. Moving on to side four, and I'm going to start things off with Wonderful Christmas Time.
The mood is right, the spirit's up, we're here tonight, and that's enough.
And I can already hear some of you rolling your eyes at my very inclusion of this song on this album, as many of you will simply perceive this song, you know, being a part of the special edition remaster as purely being a bonus track that was recorded during the same McCartney 2 sessions, non-sessions. But you only have to listen to this song's recording and its instrumentation for a couple of seconds to realise that, sonically, this is drenched in the realm of the mad McCartney 2 professor. Regardless of my obvious soft spot for this Christmas classic, as noted in one of our early bonus episodes, it's still a shame that this song was never officially affiliated with the album and its overall sound. The reason this song opens side 4 was to counteract the very intense and capricious Dark Room, and what a way to shake off that foreboding, tense atmosphere with the most shamelessly bright-faced and cheesy Christmas hit that Paul could ever come up with. We are starting the last leg of this double album now, energy may be ebbing, especially after enduring Dark Room, and we might need to put some smiles back on the faces and allow the audience to recoup somewhat before the onslaught of Check My Machine. I mentioned the following point in the actual podcast episode itself when referring as to why McCartney would have decided to include country slash folky type songs on the experimentally techie album that is McCartney 2, and the explanation I came up with was that sometimes the most off-the-wall thing for McCartney to do is to do something against his own machinations and plop a completely inappropriate song in the middle of the album just to disorientate you. And on an album as already weird as McCartney 2, what could be more insane than a Christmas song? Now this is pure McCartney. Up next we have Check My Machine, a song that I cannot stop singing the praises for.
Hi, George.
Morning, Terry.
Hi, George.
Morning, Terry.
Songs may break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Check my machine. Check, 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 check. My machine. Check, check, check. My machine. Come on, check, check, check.
Anyone who listens to this podcast or has even read a quarter of the shambolic articles on the blog at www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com will not be surprised at all by my inclusion of McCartney's most underrated non-Wings B-side. It was a favourite of mine since day one and is essentially the first Macca track which I actually felt like I discovered for myself. And now the song can get some better exposure than simply being the B-side to Waterfalls. I mean, I really couldn't think of a worse pairing of songs, but I have to move on lest I start a very long rant. I know thematically a song like Check My Machine should start off the album, and in my first draft of this podcast it was. It actually got to the point where I was actually going to commit to recording this podcast where I make McCartney 2 into a kind of concept album, but just making McCartney 2-2 is tricky enough, so I abandoned that and moved on. But in my defence, Paul, very recently indeed, put We're Open Tonight, a song that couldn't be more of an opening track if it tried, and plopped it in third place. So I think I can let this one slide. And if we're going by thematics anyway, also Front Parlour could have been the first track as well. The reason I've kept Check My Machine as far back as disc 4 is partly because I like to keep the best for last. And that in my construction of the first three discs, I'd kind of left the Rear Guard a bit bereft of synthy technoisms, and Check My Machine is strong enough in that area to carry a whole disc by itself. And in my opinion, it does that very comfortably. Now, nestled amongst a Christmas tune, an emotional acoustic number, and a live rocker, Check My Machine now defiantly stands proud as one of, if not the greatest, collages of and monuments to McCartney's brilliant, fantastic weirdness. This song is like what if Jazz Street took mescaline with poppers and then jacked into the Matrix, and is a great final send-off to this extremely creative period that Paul went through whilst he was holed up like some sort of hermit in Scotland. This song is the strangest, the most delightful, and has the greatest ability to really take you into the fractal, ethereal fourth dimension. Then we have One of These Days, and it's not the last song. The last song of the album now is Coming Up Live. Sure, I know I said I was going to try and be less heretical than normal and trying to piss off the fans, but I tried and I failed. For here I've done something I thought I would never have done. I have snatched away the serene ending of McCartney 2 that One of These Days provides, and fucking hell, I love One of These Days, I absolutely love it, and I've swapped it out for a Wings live rocker. Because I do have a habit of bookending things if I can, and to some degree so does McCartney himself. Not that McCartney 2 is a rock opera with an overarching narrative or anything. You know, I like the idea that the song that put Paul McCartney as a solo entity on the map is the song that both opens and closes the album. The placement of this song replaces the solemn emotional note with a more positive I'm back baby kind of vibe. If anything, I'm doing this as a short-term gain for Macca. Let's not forget that this album is Paul's return to going solo, his return to form, and the song itself was a huge hit across the globe, particularly in America. So to establish Paul as a potential live act here, without Wings, may have led to a world where it didn't take him another 8 or so years to start touring again. And on top of that, you know my disdain for non-album singles in general, so this was a natural fit for me. In addition to the fact that this song helps solidify McCartney as a rock act, I also think that it's just the perfect Ram versus Lennon type jibe, whereby this song would help McCartney as a solo artist, and one of the last things he ever recorded with that pop band he unsuccessfully tried to turn into a rock band for 9 years is now going to end his first solo album. It's not exactly, you know, flipping them the bird, but it shows his intentions much more clearly and may have avoided some of the uncertainties and squabbles surrounding the recording of Tug of War. In all honesty, my friends, another major factor behind this track was an issue of the lesser of two evils, rather in the same way that Americans may have voted for Hillary to avoid having to vote for Trump. I have to vote for Coming Up Live because I am not going to vote for Bogey Music or All You Horse Riders. They are not coming on this album. Conclusion. So, there we are, folks. That is what a double album of McCartney 2 is supposed to look like. This is McCartney 2-2. According to me, anyway. I've tried more so than ever to preserve what I like so much about the original release of this album, but with the freedoms offered from the double disc format, I've been able to craft something that I feel is personable to me, and what I personally feel McCartney 2 is all about, while still retaining a definite, unpredictably McCartney-esque feel to the track listing. In order, we have Coming Up, Temporary Secretary, Blue Sway, with the Richard Niles Orchestra, On the Way, Secret Friend, Waterfalls, Nobody Knows, Front Parlour, Summer's Day Song, Mr. H. Atom, You Know I'll Get You Baby, Frozen Jap, Dark Room, Wonderful Christmas Time, Check My Machine, One of These Days, and Coming Up Live. Before we start to wrap things up fully though, I guess we should acknowledge and pay homage to The Defeated, to the songs that were either dropped like Dead Weight, or those that simply didn't make the cut the second time around. These songs would have, with some trimming here or there, fit onto the double album format that we would have originally had. But I have been able to do what Paul so rarely does when presented with the possibilities of a double album. I have been able to remain strong and kill his darlings on his behalf. I'm going to take those darlings down to the creek and go all of Mice and Men on their ass. Obviously, from the album, we had Bogey Music. That made me feel absolutely nauseous. And I felt no emotion when I struck it from this list. Normally, I would at least feel some joy at the prospect of removing such bogey-based filth. But in all honesty, the song is so offensively sloppy and poorly thought out that I can't even take sadistic pleasure when getting rid of it. Moving on, from one nostril to another, we had Bogey
Wobble,
which does what I thought to be impossible, but somehow it managed to actually be more annoying than Bogey Music. Man, I'm glad that Paul moved on to the Rupert the Bear shtick quickly, because all this bogey talk is really starting to get me down. And then finally we have All You Horse Riders, and the most obvious reason that this was not included was because of the Blue Sway segment that is attached to the All You Horse Riders half. I just couldn't include it. I couldn't, you know, include All Your Horse Riders on its own. It just doesn't work that way. However, in the original article that I put up on the blog at www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com, I was actually quite harsh on All Your Horse Riders, but as you'll see in the upcoming, probably fourth or fifth Hot Hits and Cold Cuts episode, I've warmed a little bit more to All Your Horse Riders at least. Once again, folks, I can't stay mad at these songs for too long. They always have their way with me eventually. But with the Blue Sway segment, it's a definite example of Paul learning from the past, and that's always the best thing to do. But now that you've had the time to digest my own reinterpretation of history, it's time for you to get in on the action yourself. Leave a comment down below or drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com and let me know what I did right and what I got wrong about McCartney 2 too. What songs would have you kept or removed? Would you have changed the track listing, or would you have been even more faithful than me? But most importantly of all, did this even deserve to be turned back into a double album, or should I have just let it be? Again, drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com or leave a comment below. There we are, folks. I'm glad to be back. Again, like I say, I'm glad to be back doing bonus episodes. There's so much content coming out for you right now. You're probably not used to it. Hang on tight. It's going to stay this way. You are my wonderful audience members. I can only thank you enough. By the time this podcast comes out, the top 11 Paul McCartney breakup songs should be online as well. And possibly even my new War and Peace article, where I will be going through Tug of War and Pirates of Peace and doing the very opposite of this article / podcast and condensing those two albums into a single release. In all seriousness, folks, if you are a regular listener, a regular downloader, if you are one of the people who stayed loyal to me during my long sabbatical, thank you for listening to this podcast. If you read the original article, thank you very much as well. I hope you've had fun listening to this as much as I've had fun performing it. It's been a great way to kill a lunch break for me. You are all the lifeblood of this show. I'm sure Danny Laney's playing us out right now. There's loads of new episodes coming out in the future. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I really hope you enjoyed the proper McCartney 2-1. Peace and love. Peace and love.